Welcome to another episode of the Property Pulse podcast. I'm your host, Dave Stockbridge. I'm a real estate agent and auctioneer of over 25 years' experience. I am not a financial planner, so there's the disclaimer straight off the top. These are simply my opinions and observations as a long-term member of the real estate community, and hopefully share those helpful hints and tips that will help you make and save tens of thousands of dollars on your real estate journey. And for those people that have been following the podcast for several years now, welcome back. Welcome back to a new version of the Property Pulse podcast that we hope to bring you an installment of every single week. These will cover off on the hot topics of conversation that just don't apply here in Australia, but anywhere around the world. You'll find helpful hints and tips regardless of whether you're a homeowner, a landlord, somebody seeking to build a property portfolio and leverage the lifestyle that property ownership can deliver. Also, we'll be talking to real estate agents and sharing with those people in the real estate community, hopefully some tips that will help them accelerate their success and to show you behind the curtains of the real estate industry. So people that are out there and in the real world understand exactly what it is that makes a great real estate agent. Naturally, if you're also thinking of becoming a real estate agent, I'd say tune in, because this podcast will certainly help you develop the skill set required to be a success in the real estate industry. So this week, I want to talk to you about the one thing that gets raised with me more than any other. That's interest rates. Interest rates seem to, regardless of where you may be, anywhere in the Western world, affecting your day-to-day expenditure more than any other singular factor. It was only a year or so ago, it seemed, that our central banks were reticent to increase rates. As a matter of fact, there'd been very few interest rate rises over the previous decade or so. There are, in fact, people that are now 30 years old that can't remember a time when interest rates were above 10%. But for those people a generation and a half or so older, they'll remember when interest rates almost touched 20% in the early to mid-1990s and how that affected their everyday life. It seems now, fast forward 30 or so years, and we've got families now experiencing very much the same thing. This is the cost of living pressures associated with inflation. The inflationary pressures on our marketplace are yet to bear out in terms of pricing. And it is quite typical, and it has been historically the case, that when interest rates have risen, there has been an upward tick in values before the market settling back down. Now, we haven't quite seen that here in South Australia, but throughout the rest of the nation, we can see that there has been a decline in property values from the top of the boom. Now, it's very important to realise that it's best to think of the real estate market like a big pot of boiling water. And that moment that you throw, and for anybody that's ever cooked spaghetti, for instance, you throw the pasta into the boiling pot, and what happens? You have this simmering effect, and the bubbles now represent the high water mark rather than the water itself. Now, think of the peak of the market very much like those bubbles on top of the water in the pot of pasta. They're there. They're the high water mark, but are they really the metric that you should be making a judgment of with respect to how high the water is in that pot? Well, the reality is that statistically, the bubbles do represent that high water mark, but there's ordinarily a great deal of activity between 3 and 10% less than the peak pricing. And so all we've seen that's occurred over the last 12 or 18 months throughout much of mainland Australia's real estate market has been that the prices have gone from the bubbles on top of the water, from the boiling over effect, back down to that level that that you can safely say represents the market. Now, I would say that figure probably hasn't changed much in the last 12 to 18 months. It's only been the effect of very low transactional activity and very low stock availability that has led to people paying absolute premium prices to secure homes. It has just been the case and continues to be the case here in South Australia that even though we're in a very low stock environment, it gives the effect, well, that we are in a low stock environment, that gives the effect of very high demand. The reality is, I believe, is that the pool of buyers has been contracting very much in alignment with the amount of stock that's available. But that's still enough competition to facilitate prices that still represent record pricing in almost any given suburb here in Adelaide, and still pricing that throughout the rest of the country is only a matter of several percent, and normally within single figures of what the pricing was that was being achieved 12 or so months earlier, albeit in less competition. So what's happened? Simply, there are less outlier buyers in the eastern seaboard and throughout most of the country, but there's enough outlier buyers in the Adelaide market to sustain this increase in pricing that we're seeing currently. So what's an outlier? An outlier is usually that person that's been spending the last 6 to 8 weeks attending open inspections. They're sick to death of now spending their weekends with real estate agents. The novelty is well and truly worn off. And if they happen to have young children, well, they're sick to death of bribing their children with McDonald's or Hungry Jack's to get to the third open inspection of the day. It's no longer a joy and very much a chore going to open inspections. Most couples by this stage have probably had an argument or two over either a property or what they should or shouldn't offer on a property. They've normally missed out on the one they really wanted and are now willing to accept maybe less than the best in order just to get something that they're both quite comfortable with and that they can now afford. Simply, these people have given up on wanting everything for nothing and are now happy to settle for reasonable and even happy to pay a premium price to do so. They're normally driven by time frames, so either their own property settling or they're coming to the end of their lease. So either way, these people are pursuing a time frame that's quickly closing in on them. They're also no longer enjoying the process and they just want the pain to go away. Ultimately, they're of the mind that if they can just secure anything, they can then make it their home regardless of what that might be. So these are the very best buyers. That we absolutely love them in the world of real estate. They're people that will quite happily separate themselves from every cent the bank will let them have in order just to make that pain go away and to secure a home that they can move into in 4 to 6 weeks' time. So they're the people that have been setting the pace with respect to values and continue to. There's just less of those people in the eastern seaboard at the moment. So the effect of interest rates here in Adelaide has not been the same as what we've seen throughout the rest of the country. And why is that? Well, whenever you see these anomalies, the first thing you need to look at is supply and demand. And it is just the case that here in Adelaide, demand has sustained and supply has remained very, very tight. There has been some freeing up post-COVID along the eastern seaboard, and that may speak to the more stringent COVID restrictions that were imparted, and that may have led to a bottling up effect of interest in the post-COVID era. And so what there was a particular flurry, and anybody that witnessed auctions in Sydney during that period can attest to the high levels of competition, the high levels of registration, and there was many, many very happy auctioneers. Every auctioneer looked like a superstar there for about 3 to 6 months. But then things started to turn, and it doesn't take much for sentiment to really bite deeply. And essentially what had happened was a few properties didn't sell, then many more didn't sell under the hammer, and then all of a sudden there were less auctions going on and vendors were all of a sudden protecting their value rather than pursuing the best that the market had to give. So there was now a perception that perhaps the market had peaked, and so vendors rather than take the chance of achieving maybe less than the best at auction that they might be able to command by asking a price, that a lot of agents were all of a sudden recommending let's not go through perhaps the embarrassment of a failed auction, and let's now look at running a private treaty campaign in justification of our price instead. So clearance rates started to slow down. The media jumps onto that, and all of a sudden there becomes a sentiment that becomes entrenched in a marketplace. And that has been compounded by interest rates and has led to some freeing up of stock in those marketplaces. What I just caution anybody who's thinking about the long-term ramifications of their determination to perhaps buy a property, regardless of whether the market's going great or slowing down. Look at where the real estate market is likely to be in 10 years' time. Now, very fortunately, the Property Council of Australia have done some research with respect to this and maintain that Australia is going to be approximately 167,000 dwellings short of what the population will require by 2035. So we're talking a period only 12 years into the future. We're going to need, and 167,000 dwellings is quite a substantial area when you consider that an average suburb might have 1,000 to 1,500 homes. Against a backdrop of our government committing to an increase in the migrant intake. So this is going to be, there's going to be a compounding effect over the next 10 to 15 years with respect to Australia's immigration policy and its inability to provide housing stock to the market. Now, some people will suggest that the federal government in their most recent report suggested that they were going to build 1 million homes. This was a policy that came forth out of the budget. There was a projection that the federal government would either aid or directly build 1 million homes. Now, I guess the government weren't aware that we're also in a material shortage and a labour shortage, and we just simply do not have the capability as a country to build that many homes. So as a result, I don't have any confidence in the ability of the government in order to execute on that plan. I'd also suggest that 167,000 dwellings is a lot, and when you consider the styles of home. Now, that's not 167,000 four-bedroom, two-living area homes. And also keep in mind that whenever the government talks about housing affordability, they're actually only talking about a very small percentage of the homes that they're expecting to be built. So, yes, we do require 1 million homes. There won't necessarily be 1 million affordable homes. So I'll just bring to you also your attention recent efforts made by the South Australian government. They have now announced that they're releasing 72 or 73,000 allotments. These are greenfields developments. Again, they talk about to release the pressure of supply on the market. And yes, I guess this will make some difference. But ultimately, you can't make these determinations and then say you're simply bringing in more people and compounding the problem or kicking it down the road even further. And you can't say that when your planning policies only provide for 15 to 20% of housing, new housing to be built to be affordable housing, that you're addressing the housing affordability crisis, especially when the housing affordability is simply based on price. The houses that are built to be affordable simply aren't family homes. These are apartments, they're units, they're townhouses, they're terraces, they're high-density homes. And they're high-density homes that tend to, over time, unfortunately, degenerate and social problems become an issue. And that social problems becoming issues in and around where mortgage holders are. So we are creating several problems that we are kicking down the road and not addressing now. So what would be a solution here? Well, if the government stopped pursuing a policy of GDP growth come hell or high water and looked at GDP per capita instead, then that might be a good approach. Now, if you to do that, then you would look at those industries that we have available to us that would enable us to increase our per capita GDP, farming, mining in particular, are great opportunities for us to be able to do that. These are now industries that don't require a lot of labour in order to extract the resources in the same way as what they did even 50 years ago. And we've got a lot in the ground here in Australia, and it's what the whole world needs and what the developing world needs in order to grow. We also have tremendous natural resources in terms of energy, in terms of gas and oil. And these are industries that are not fully exploited, yet they're awesome per capita resources. So does Australia need a growing population? Do we need a growing population in order to sustain our way of life? It would seem to me that a growing population has only negatively affected the quality of life of normal working people. Those people that now are sitting on congested roads in areas of poor infrastructure, with schools that seemingly aren't able to provide the support that children need to flourish in the modern world. All of these things are issues that can be addressed with good policy making, and it's unfortunate that we just don't see that type of policy making in place. Nonetheless, interest rates. To get back to interest rates and how all of that ties into what we're talking about, interest rates are now one of the few ways or few levers that the central bank has in order to control the extent that everyday people spend. This, over the next 3 or 4 months, there's going to be over 1 million people that will fall out of their current fixed rate mortgage who are going to be, in some cases, paying twice as much as what they were locked into in terms of interest. This obviously has a knock-on effect in terms of their payment, and then that has an effect on what people spend out of their pocket. I do maintain, though, that people are more likely to give up on maybe some elements of their lifestyle that might be costing them $200, $300, or $400 a month rather than simply sell their house and bail out of the real estate market. And I would say that that's quite wise in order to do so. It doesn't seem to me that we are now in an economy of the free market. It seems very much that the Keynesians are in control. And what the Keynesians like to do is to keep the bubble bubbling along. They don't like to see the bubble burst. And will do one of two things. They will encourage stimulus in the event that the private sector is not flourishing, and use the government's ability to borrow in order to prop up those gaps or prop up the economy in the event that the private sector contracts. So ensuring that the economy remains roughly the same, even in a period of maybe slight recession. Also, interest rates. Now, we have already gone through the biggest period of stimulus spending that we have known. The Australian Federation, the federal government, spent more money in the last 3 years than they did in the previous 120 or so combined. So we are in as much debt as we've ever been as a nation before, and that's the case right across the Western world. Doesn't matter if you're in the UK, the United States, Canada, New Zealand, all of our governments went deeply, deeply into debt. Now to who? Who really knows? But they went deeply into debt. So they've already flush the economy full of money. So they've pulled that lever already. That's now having an inflationary effect. Now, the inflationary effect is what's needed, because the more inflation, the easier it is for the federal government to pay off that debt. So what else have they got? Interest rates. What do interest rates do? Well, interest rates mean that you and I don't spend as much of that money that has been flushed through the economy as perhaps we were before. So for people that are perhaps enjoying a few little extra luxuries in life that they've become accustomed to over the last 2 or 3 years, for those people that have maybe gotten used to buying an extra new car every 2 years or 3 years instead of every 5 or 6, maybe some of that behaviour needs to be reined in. But I do ardently recommend to anybody, and do keep in mind, I'm not a financial advisor, so certainly check in with people smarter than me before you make any big determinations. But I would be always of the mind that holding a position in real estate for as long as we are 160 or so thousand dwellings short of what our population requires seems to be a sure bet. Now, just to confirm that in your mind, and just one final thought before we do go away today, when you consider the effect that interest rate rises have on rental values, and how that underpins property values, then you soon realise that real estate really is set up to be the best bet that everyday people can make in their financial lives. It's your tax-free haven for a little while longer, perhaps. So if you own that property and it's your principal place of residence here in Australia, unlike other places around the world, you get to enjoy all of the capital growth or all of the benefit of the capital growth come sale time without having to share by way of a tax back with the government. Of course, if you do own an investment property, then you will pay capital gains tax naturally. But here's the reality. If you have a stake in real estate and you're experiencing interest rate rises, you tend to pass on those interest rate rises by way of increased rent. And for as long as rental values are within 20 to 25% of what a property would of that nature would otherwise cost to buy, then what you'll find is most people will see that 20 to 25% extra that they're spending as compulsory savings and a good investment in their future that ultimately will provide them a rate of return come sale time through the capital growth that seems to be engineered into our real estate market as our government deliberately brings in more people than what we have housing for. So for as long as the government continues with its policy of bringing in an extra 50 or so thousand people a year who then inevitably bring their family along and have children themselves, and normally one or two ends up being five or six within a period of 10 or so years. So for as long as you've got the government pursuing that policy, and also for as long as there is a shortage of materials and labour, that means and a willingness of local and state governments to build the infrastructure that's required to accommodate more housing development, for as long as that status quo is maintained, your bet in real estate is a safe one. Now, I'm Dave from Real, and these are helpful hints and tips that I hope to share with you. These are sometimes deeper analysis, much like this episode of the Property Pulse podcast. If you do like this podcast and you think it'll resonate with somebody that you know, please share it. If you do enjoy our podcast and have been a fan of ours before and haven't yet subscribed, please do that as well. So for more of these tips into the future, please tune in. There'll be a new episode next week. I'm Dave Stockbridge. This has been the Property Pulse podcast, and we'll see you next time.